Who would like to start by sharing some memories? Don, do you want to?
I could always say something.
Well, I was initiated in 1968, and there was always the anticipation, even then, that Master was planning to come on tour. And we were, I was initiated by Reno Serene in Anaheim at the hospital, at the sanctuary there. And so eventually Master did come on tour. And I got to see him in Anaheim during the Anaheim stay, when he spoke at the Anaheim High School and at the Disneyland Hotel, and also in Northern California when he was at various places in San Francisco and Santa Clara. One vivid memory, at the Anaheim Hotel, you could go and you could walk up to the Master would be on the, after a talk, Master would be sitting on the podium, and you could go up to him and either ask a question or whatever, one at a time. And I had noticed this one young girl who was at all the sessions, and she always brought this big, colorful pillow that she sat on. It was like this tall. And so she walked up to Master, and she was carrying her pillow with her. And she comes up, and so this is your moment to speak to Master. And she goes, "Master, I was wondering if you would bless my pillow." And he goes, "It's you I'm interested in." So that, and I mean, and there were just so many little instances of that on the tour where we would be on one level and he would be on a completely different level, but it would all end up being very humorous. There was another remembrance. The sanctuary in Anaheim used to be a Seventh-day Adventist church. So on one side you had a stained glass window of Jesus, and another, there was two huge stained glass windows, and then in between was the picture of Master Salwan Singh and Master Kripal Singh. And it was very, from the first time I went in there, it was like so eclectic that I went, this something's going on here. And where was I going with that? So we, on the tour, we were, Master would spent the nights in the little house next to the sanctuary. And sometimes during the day, in between events, we would gather outside and hoping to see him. And this one time, there was like five or six of us out there, and Kyanaji opened the door and says, "Yes, yes, come in. And so Master and Reno were sitting on the couch. Master was sitting in a chair, and right next to him at a right angle, Reno was sitting on the couch. And they were just, there was nothing much going on. They were just chatting. And then they just said, "Well, do you want to ask any questions?" And we came up with some questions, and but it was just really a time for us to just this select little group that was lucky enough to be there to come in. And the one thing that stands out in my memory is that Reno, who was a very successful real estate businessman, and he really did have kind of this gregarious kind of easy-flowing personality, and so in here's our real estate salesman right here next to me. Master had said something, And then Reno had this little comment, and it was kind of like a little story. But it was obviously going to have a punchline, because you could tell the mood of the whole thing, that this was going to be a little joke. And I watched Master, and he leaned forward, and he was hanging on every word. And his eyes would light up, and as Reno would get near the punchline, and Master was like this, and then this corny punchline comes, and Reno laughs, and Master laughs, and then he reaches over, put your leg down here, he reaches over to Reno, and he goes like this. And it just says, "You're a good old boy. I really appreciate you." And that was so, I hardly remember any of the words that were said during those sessions, but he came off as being such a very real human being, and just being so down-to-earth friendly. And when I was at the Unity of Man conference, that was the way he treated all those religious leaders. Each one of them, he just met them one-on-one. And at the conference, are we going to play that movie tomorrow? Is the Unity of Man? Okay, so I put together a little movie that has to do with the Unity of Man. And a lot of the footage I got is from the internet. And it shows these different religious leaders that were present on the dais with Master. But there was space for them each to do their own chanting or their own little instrumental musical thing. And Master, it's like Master was saying, "Oh, please share with us. Tell us how you connect with God. How what your ceremonies are like." And anyway, he was a friend to all of them. They all really loved him, and it's because he was so totally genuine. Anyway, you'll see in the movie tomorrow. It comes out in all kinds of ways. So, okay, that is that's what I have to say.
I haven't told this story. I could have told it a lot of years ago. Takes a little bit of courage. It's a little hard to tell. But it started out, I was initiated in 71, and I lived in Santa Barbara with a group of initiates. We all lived around a little grassy area. And come 72, and we're all going to go, race back east. Not all of us, about half of us. So I had a little Volkswagen Bug, and as of then I'd only probably driven 200 miles at one time. And I had a four-year-old son, and I took out all the seats except the driver's seat, and so we both had our own sleeping spaces. And we took off for Washington, D.C., and it took us about 10 days. Because I had a little kid, and so we stopped all the time. And we slept at rest areas, and residential areas, and wherever, it seemed safe. And we found some swimming holes, and anyway. So, and all the time we're singing songs to Master. I had just been initiated, and my life then was only Master. And so somehow, I can't remember the trip. It was a good trip. Anyway, so after 10 days, I had something that said where it was, where he was coming in and what time. And, of course, we didn't have phones. And I came in a little late. And I went into the airport, and I looked around. I didn't see anybody. I didn't see any initiates, and I didn't know what to do. and I was getting freaked out. And so we walked in, and there was a spot. You could see the planes coming in, and I didn't see anything. So I went over. I was really getting upset, and I started sobbing, and I was really super embarrassed. So I went over to what was seemed like a little corner in the building. It was a corner, a part of a corner, like a, you know, more than 90 degrees. And it kind of indented at that point, right at some point in the wall. And so anyway, I'm standing there, and I'm sobbing, and I'm looking down, and there's this little window. You know, a strange place for a little window. But sure enough, you know, I'm staring at the asphalt, and all of a sudden, Master walks in the, framed in this window. Beautiful. And he looks up at me. Oh my gosh, there was nobody with him. I saw no other person. It just framed him. And so I don't remember anything else except when I finally found everybody. Oh my gosh. So that could be the mystery of why he left the red carpet. I didn't think of that till years later, but thank you.
Okay, so this memory goes back from 72 to now, is 50 years. So I'll relate it as best I can. And it's good for me to bring up these memories and to share with you. Myself, my wife, and a year and a half old baby, my son, we were restoring an old Cape house built in 1801. And as fate would have it, or karma, or however you credit it, it was near the ashram, St. Bonnie Ashram. And my wife mentioned, I met some really nice people from an ashram. Would you like to go there? And I said, no, I wouldn't like to go there. We have enough to do with meeting a lot of new people. And this was 1971, 72, so it was still part of, you know, the counterculture. We were the counterculture. No, there's, look, a lot of ashrams and stuff. I don't want to go. But she was a little persistent, and she said, well, they have child care during the meeting, the satsang, and the toddler would be good for him to have some friends, you know, have a little, time with his peers. So that, I said, okay, we'll go. So we went that Sunday, and I did what everyone did. I took a blanket from the pile. I sat on a floor seat. I put the blanket over me. I promptly fell asleep. Then I woke up after, and I said, I feel really good. So next week, I said, we'll go back. The kid has a playgroup to go with, and I have a good rest. Same thing happened. Probably by the third week, or fourth week subsequent to that, it was a Friday, and I had a toothache, which is terribly painful, you know. And it was Friday evening, and are you looking at your teeth? Toothache, yeah. And it was a Friday evening, too late to go to a dentist, of course, and I did what I guess, you know, I would do. I drank a lot of whiskey. And it came Sunday, and I still had the toothache came back and had hangover. I said, okay, you know, we'll go to the ashram and see what happens. And took the blanket, sat down, and Russell wasn't running the satsang then. I forget his name. The co-leader was, I forget his name. You would know, but that's irrelevant. His assistant group leader. Okay, his name escapes me. He went to Yale, I remember. All right, no matter. And he started talking. And Ken Dicknell, yes. It was Ken who was talking. And as soon as he started talking, my toothache, it subsided. I go, huh? I don't feel any more pain. So after that, I mentioned, you know, I told my wife, this is serious stuff. I think we have to look into this. And we got initiated. But then a few months later, Master went on tour. And as the mind makes you think, we were following on tour around the East Coast. And when Master came to St. Bonnie, I mean, I was thinking, Master doesn't know who I am. You know, I'm just like a groupie following a concert tour or something. And Master doesn't know who I am. So he gave his talk at the ashram hall, and I did what everyone else did. I picked up a blanket. I have a blanket here. You know, I started that. I can't meditate without a blanket. So I took a blanket and sat down on the floor chair. And Master started by saying, why do you hide under blankets? People will think, what's going on there? Then he stopped. People started laughing. I didn't laugh. I was really thunderstruck.
I have just started thinking more after seeing the video last night. I guess it was last night, with the stories people had of Master's 1972 tour, their experiences with it. And it, my reflections, I really got thinking about all of this a lot more, because I did get to see Master on the 72 tour. I definitely did not have any dramatic stories like that. It was wonderful. I mean, I was glad I had the experience. I mean, there was no doubt about that, but it was, you know, there wasn't that much going on in a certain sense. Part of it was I'd been initiated just a few months before the tour, and at the time I found out about the path and got initiated, and by the time of the tour, I had hardly attended any satsangs at all, because I had been kind of in the middle of nowhere, 6 hours south of Chicago, for a couple months. I was in Champaign-Urbana and attended satsang there, and I had maybe gone to one satsang in Iowa, and this one satsang in Chicago, which was the day that I got initiated in Chicago. So I didn't know more than a dozen initiates, and mainly I knew stories like from Satsang Desh and things like that, as far as knowing about other initiates or that sort of thing. So it was all, everything was new. I didn't know what to expect. By the time of the tour, I was in Iowa, which was only about 5 hours away, but because of Bob, my future husband's connections still from Illinois, we were able to make arrangements. We were going to stay. Some Chicago initiate had owned apartment buildings and had spare apartments that people could stay in and so forth, so it was all set up. Well, discovered when I got there, it was like, well, there were, I don't know, 6 or 8 of us in a tiny little bedroom with, there were some bunk beds, men and women together, and I said, I don't think Master would approve of this, especially the way it all, anyway, and we're getting all these instructions, don't do bhajan in public. Don't bother Master. He's very busy and hardworking, and so definitely don't try to go up to his room or bug him or any whatever. And before the first satsang, we did go to the airport, and that was amazing. Someone here had said it was like a rock star arriving, and it was. Both the number of people, although it wasn't where I was there when he arrived in O'Hare. It wasn't like some of the pictures you see where there's a large room filled with people. But we were along the hallway where he was coming in, and apart from our own knowledge, I was aware the airplane, the airlines, and the local people were very conscious of who he was because he was the first person off the plane. And it was just incredible to that first glimpse of him and seeing him. I mean, just amazing. But he wasn't looking side to side. He was looking straight ahead. It didn't take long to just pass through. So it was wonderful. And there were other people I could see who were visibly very, very affected by it. But so we got to the first satsang, and we're told, initiates have to sit at the back. You've got to leave the front for visitors and people who are not initiates and don't know about Master. And I was so disappointed, and so were the I was with a small group of other, like 20-somethings, and I guess none of us had seen Master. This was going to be the first time. Well, I don't know, somebody said something, and then they said, well, okay, if you want to, you can sit up in front on the floor in front of the platform and be up there. So, of course, we did that. However, most of us were not used to sitting on the floor, and, you know, we waited quite a while for Master to come, and then quite a while before it got started, and then the pretty long talk, and it was just like, oh, you could hardly concentrate. It was so uncomfortable. Afterwards, my neighbor said, yeah, I'm afraid Master was, you know, hearing all of us, aches and pains and whatever. Hope it didn't interrupt, you know, it didn't disturb him as he gave his talk. So we had that and so forth. So I only got to be there about 3 days, I think. And by the third day, I was receptive enough that I was getting the vibrations and so on. But at the same time, as that was happening, there had been talks at two different hotels, and then at the big Unity building, temple or whatever, which is very large. And Bob and I had told friends and relatives about it, so some of them came. And it was mostly like, oh, yeah, he was a nice old man. So my sister-in-law was excited to hear. He gave the story of don't bend your elbows, and she had just learned about that folklore story and some class she had, so she was thrilled at that. But it was kind of humdrum. But then, by the time it was all over, I realized I recognized there was significance in a couple things that happened, but it took me a long time to kind of identify what it was about it. At one of the talks was at the Palmer House, which was a big, like a big ballroom. And at the end of it, they said, people can come up to Master on the stage for if they have questions or concerns or whatever. And of course, would not have occurred to me to do that. That's for somebody else. Well, the first person on the stage was somebody I knew. Well, actually, the first initiate I'd ever met, I think. Because after I found out about the path, I wrote to say, oh, are there any satsangs in these or that areas where I was or passing through at various times? And there's a satsang that is held in a health food store in Davenport, Iowa. And the owner is an initiate. And so in those days, again, everything went by letter, and I wrote them and said, oh, I'm going to be passing through on such and such a day. Could I stop in and see? So anyway, she was very gracious, this little old lady, and gave me a lunch of garbanzo beans boiled with celery, and I think there was probably some Bragg's aminos poured on top. she probably told me about the vegetarian cookbook that existed at that time. So I knew her, and I thought, that's interesting. You know, out of all these however many people, this is somebody I know. Well, her question was, she was saying, Master, I have this health food store, and like on Saturday nights, I'm down on my hands and knees on the floor, scrubbing the floor, and I could just picture like this, her little back room with the faded linoleum and stuff. And she said, and I just hear the sound current, the music is just coming in. And what she seemed to be saying was, isn't this sacrilegious? I mean, isn't there something wrong about this? Well, they didn't intend to have the mic on. So at that point, somebody remembered to turn off the mic. This is my memory of it. I don't know if anybody else knows anything different, but didn't get what Master's answer was, but you could imagine. And then on a different day,
okay, so you didn't hear Master's reply.
No, I didn't hear Master's reply. So it was just I know that lady. I mean, there were you know, thousands of people over the 3-day period, and I knew, and I didn't even know well, but this handful of initiates. At I think it was the other hotel, after a satsang, and we'd been instructed, don't bother Master. Walked out into sort of the lobby area, and Mr. Khanna was saying, come up to Master Suite, come up to Master Suite, come up. So I was with Bob. Bob, we were told not to go up. We shouldn't bother Master. No, no. And I said, but this is Mr. Khanna. And I'd read about him in Satsang Desh, and I knew that, you know, he was one of the leaders, and he must know what he's doing. And I said, after some thought, I said, okay, I'm going to go up. So I did. However, I was very late compared to the other people, so I was just standing at the back and was only there a couple minutes before everybody was ushered out. In that length of time, I heard a question from somebody else I knew, who was somebody who was connected with the Champaign-Urbana satsang. And as a matter of fact, she was the person I probably knew best. I can't remember if she was engaged at that time, but probably to a satsangi. She was not initiated, and she didn't think she needed initiation. I knew from knowing her previously that she had inner experiences and saw light and so forth from the time she was a child in an orphanage in France. And she didn't think she needed anything more, even though to the rest of us it seemed obvious, because when she walked into the home where the satsang was held, there was a picture of Baba Sawan Singh on the wall, and she said, oh, I recognize him. I think she said it was a dream or something, but she was up in a hot air balloon, and he was down on the ground, and he was saying, come back, come back. So this was her memory of this person that she now saw on the picture, and people said to her, you must have had some connection. She said, no, it's just because my fiancé is an initiate of Kirpal Singh. So, you know, it was just that kind of connection there. Well, I couldn't understand Master's answer to her. Whatever he said, I may have understood part of it, but the part that if I did, I don't remember it. And so I had those two experiences that were both at a distance. I never had a direct interaction with Master, or was able to look into his eyes or anything like that. And I realized later that was his way. I mean, he can't be right with every single person who attends, but he was showing me those connections. out of the handful of people I knew connected to him, I had those two experiences there with together with him.
I wasn't quite sure what to do because I wasn't prepared. A few months ago, a friend of mine was writing his memoirs of the 72 tour. This is Steve Diamond, not Steve Grossberg. And he contacted me and wanted me to share some memories. So I wrote this spiel out and sent it to him. So I was going to read you the spiel, if that's okay, because I already got it, the words down. Okay, so this is what I told him. This is my experience of the Dallas stop on the 1972 tour. I had stepped back from the tour for a few weeks and rejoined the group in Dallas. Those were pre-cell phone and pre-email days, so all I had to follow was the address of a church where the program would be held. As a taxi from the airport pulled up at a busy Dallas intersection, I felt very anxious about whether I was even in the right place and how would I actually know it. It was early afternoon, and no one was likely to be there, so I was going to be alone at the church till everyone showed up in the evening, and would the church actually be unlocked? And then it turned out there were two churches across the street from each other, so I had to decide which church it probably was. And went up and tried the door, and thank God it was unlocked. Amazing. And I walked in, and of course it was empty and quiet, except that in the front row on the far side of the church was a girl sitting with her eyes closed meditating. And I recognized her from the tour. And I remember, like, oh my God, my family is here. I am home. It was a great moment. Anyway, I don't actually recall the other specifics of the program other than it was easy and it was sweet. The next stop was St. Petersburg. And because of the distance, a number of us opted to fly and booked discounted student tickets on the same brand of airlines flight as Master. This was pre-security days and pre-assigned seat days. All you got was a boarding pass, and you chose your own seat once you boarded, like you were on a bus. So Master and his party walked across the tarmac and boarded first, and then we all followed. I was among the first initiates to board, along with my friend Steve. I immediately saw that Master was sitting by the window on the left side of the aisle in something like row 6. The middle seat beside him was empty, and Reno Serene was in the aisle seat. In front of them, Ben Ringel was in the window seat directly in front of Master, and the two seats beside him were empty. The other initiates who had boarded before us had opted to sit in nearby rows on the right side of the aisle where they could look over and see Master. At that point, our choices were limited, and I personally did not have the courage to ask Ben if we could join him. Thank God, Steve had no such compunctions. Ben, are these seats taken? And Ben is like, no, not very enthusiastically. So we got in. And being a gentleman, Steve let me go in ahead of him. I got the middle seat, and Steve took the aisle. I was blown away. It was the most perfect set of seats you could ever imagine on a plane. Oh, God. And usually the middle seat isn't a good seat, but this was the best seat in the house. Ben, sitting in front of Master, had to keep his seat upright. Of course, he wasn't going to recline it. Steve, sitting in front of Reno, kept his seat mostly upright, although he did recline a few times and took some amazing videos, which I'm going to tell you guys, you filmmakers, about later. They're amazing. But no one was behind me, and I could recline my seat. And when I reclined my seat, I had a direct view. Oh, God. Sitting by the window, and he's a few feet away from me, and there he was. It was just me and him. And so I didn't do it a lot. I mean, obviously, I was polite, but I would do it sometimes. I would look over at him, recline my seat, look over at him, and he would look at me. And then I would smile at him, and he would smile back at me. And then I'd, you know, put the seat back and give him space. And then, it occurred to me at some point, you know, there might be more to this opportunity than just playing peekaboo with the master. So I, next time I reclined my seat and looked at him, I didn't smile. And he looked back at me, and he didn't smile. He just looked. And, anyway, you can all fill in the blanks. It was, you know, it was hard. Actually, it was hard and incredible. And that's all I'm going to say about it. Anyway, the rest of the flight, I remember, was pretty lighthearted. Yeah, some lighthearted memories, such as when the meal was served. Notes from the initiates were passed surreptitiously to us. Did Master eat the pudding? Yes. Did Master eat the muffin? No. And my personal favorite, did Master chew each mouthful 100 times? No, he gobbled everything up. Once Gyaniji came by, and holding his hand on his stomach, he had a short conversation with Master in Hindi that obviously none of us could follow. After he left, Master turned to Reno and said, Gyaniji used to spend an hour in the bathroom. It was the only chance he got to meditate. One of the sweetest experiences came near the end of the flight. Master had obviously been ruminating on the program just ended because he suddenly turned to Reno and said, Dallas was a good stop, he said. No show. And, you know, we all know who are there. We all know how much Master valued simplicity. I met David Teed many years later and shared this story with him, but I don't know that he fully appreciated it. I don't think any program or any seva we might offer could have gotten a greater compliment.
Okay, I have an addition to Maureen's story, but we'll see if I'm right. I was... It's too far out? I'm trying to get away from this... So, okay, how's this? Good. Maureen and I, our mutual friend Steve Diamond, used to always like to talk about a flight he was on with Master, which I think is this one. And he said the thing that stuck in his head was that the stewardess came and asked the master if he would like a drink. Would he like tea, coffee, whatever? And Master said, I'll have some Darjeeling tea. And then, I don't know if Steve was next, but everybody started, all the satsangis decided they were going to have Darjeeling tea as the stewardess walked down the plane, which was kind of amusing and says something about the people on the tour. Anyway, aside from that story, I thought I'd relate something. I think I've related it here before, but one of the most memorable parts of the 72 tour for me was the stop in San Francisco. And I don't know how many of you were there at the First Unitarian Church, but my friend Bridget Davis, who had introduced me to the path, and I had sort of hitched a ride with two satsangis in a VW bus driving from Vancouver to San Francisco. I think it was pretty much nonstop. And at some point, they said, the driver said, I'm too tired, I can't drive anymore, and asked me if I could drive. And I said, well, I haven't had much experience with the stick shift, but I can give it a try. And I managed to do it. And this was like the last leg of the journey, somewhere between San Francisco and Berkeley, actually. And we're coming on 80, and we think we're a bit late for the satsang that Master was going to give. And we were a little depressed about that, and I was driving. And the guy said to me, "How fast are you going?" I said, "Well, it says it's 65. And he said, "My bus won't go over 50. I don't know how you're doing that." But anyway, I drove it all the way across the bridge and then gave it back to him because he knew how to get to the church. Which helped. We arrived just in time, found a parking place, and all was working out. And what was really interesting to me, I'd been to several stops on the tour. I wasn't somebody who managed to go to every place. But there was Chicago really had a long stay of about 5 days. And I went to Cincinnati and Vancouver. And there was a certain similarity to each satsang. But San Francisco, as we're driving down, Bridget said to me, "I heard Master said San Francisco was going to be special." And I was like, "Why would he say that? And where did you hear that?" But so that's sort of in the back of my mind. And as we walked up the stairs to the Unitarian Church, all of a sudden it stopped looking like the typical stop we made and started looking like the Kumbh Mela. And every spiritual group in the area had shown up, and there were Hare Krishna people chanting, and you know, and tables of different spiritual groups making their offerings, and incense was burning, and everyone seemed to want to dress up for the whole occasion. So there was plenty of outfits you normally wouldn't see even on the streets of San Francisco. But so this was a great atmosphere, I thought. And I sat down and somehow got into conversation with a guy sitting right behind me. And he had been initiated by the Master, but had stopped following him and was following a Buddhist path, which was interesting to me because I had studied Buddhism a little bit. And anyway, Kirpal finally came to the stage, and I had a pretty good seat. And my main memory is at the end of his talk, he said, "Now we'll all sit for meditation." And so, you know, everybody's kind of keyed up for this, as if that's what you should do when you meditate. But we went into meditation for I don't know how many minutes. It wasn't long. But I remember I had some, you know, the best experience I had anywhere on the tour, and was somewhat blown away with it. And then I turned around and said to this guy, non-practicing initiate, "What did you think of that?" And he goes, "This has really done something to my mind. I don't know what to say." My mind is blown. I can't, you know. But that was, you know, sort of a peak experience for me on the tour. And other people have said they had really intense experiences at that sitting. And that's what I'll remember, because I think we don't hear, you know, really hear what Master Kirpal could do for people's meditations. And it really showed up that night.
I have an addendum to Chicago. It's just, this is wonderful because you just learn the amazing things that happened, what Master did. In Chicago, I drove in a Beetle with Fletcher and John Powell, and we went up from Montreal and over to Ontario, to Toronto, to Chicago. And my wife and the baby flew because her parents lived in Chicago. We said, well, we're going to see the master. She has to be with her parents. But her mom and dad, her parents, were against this whole thing, this whole path. What is this guru you're doing? You're living in New Hampshire. You have this baby. And he was a powerful attorney. And we were afraid that he would try to, you know, take the baby away, gain custody, because we're feeding the baby a vegetarian diet. So this was in Chicago. And so you mentioned that Master stayed longer in Chicago than was scheduled. And I think maybe this is the reason. So my mother-in-law says, could I come to see the Master? Okay, you could come see the Master. She's asking me. She sees the Master. She says, this is the most beautiful man I've ever seen, huh? I want to get initiated. Could I get initiated? She gets initiated. Then my father-in-law says, I want to see the Master too. So he went to the Unitarian Church, and he was zonked. He said, I never met such beautiful people. Could I get initiated? I said, no, you can't, because Master's leaving the next day. Out of luck. You know, you can't. You'll have to wait or go someplace else to meet him. And then Master announces he's spending another day in Chicago, and he gets initiated.
We saw Master in Montreal, the Windsor Hotel. The room that we were in is very similar to the rooms that most of us have here. Very small, very narrow beds, twin beds. We, my wife and a three-year-old child. So my wife, being a younger mother, volunteered our room as a babysitting type room. People who were driving on a day trip could come to our room and wash their child and stuff like that. And that was fine. And then Master heard about it, and he said that he would come to the children's room. Great, you know. So about 10, 15 minutes before Master was due to arrive, people start showing up. People who had children, knew about children, thought used to be a child. Everybody showed up. And we're sitting at the end of the beds. So when Master came in, we really got to see him. And at one point, my wife taps me, and she says, look behind you. And it was like looking at some kind of thing out of the Christian Bible, row after row, because there's enough room for maybe three people to sit on the side of a bed, maybe four, but not like everyone was there. And the room was really big. And, you know, Master came in, you know, and he left, and everyone left, and the room got small again. They didn't charge us extra.
Just as a little contrast, is this okay? Because as a little contrast about the sanctuary, to Master enjoying the joke with Reno. And I wonder if you remember this, Don. We were waiting for Master to come in. The sanctuary was packed. And there was a delay in Master's arrival. And Mr. Khanna started telling jokes. Do you remember that? He was standing up front telling jokes. And people were laughing when Master walked in. And Master was, his face was so serious. He said, this is not a place of mirth and joy. And he repeated it, this is not a place of mirth and joy. So that just, it was an interesting contrast. A couple of other things. My husband Jim and I were on the flight from Anaheim to Dallas. And we were, I think we were the second row behind Master. Second or third row behind Master. And Harcharan Singh. Harcharan Singh was carrying a big basket of fresh fruit. Apples, oranges, I don't know what else. And he must have given out fruit to each of us on the plane. And I received an orange and was happy with, I'm happy with anything, you know, Prashad. And the girl in front of me, who was from our area in San Brinton, turned around. After we received the fruit, she turned around to me. She was over the seat, looking over the seat at me, and she wanted to know if she could trade her apple for an orange, for the orange that I had. And I was most reluctant, as you can imagine. But I did. I gave her the orange. I took the apple. And, you know, I was disappointed because that's what we had been given. Whatever we received was what we'd received from Master. And just in just a few moments, an orange came rolling back down to me under the seats, directly to me. there's another story. In Cincinnati, my parents lived outside of Cincinnati, so Jim and I were staying with them, of course, and they went to see Master, give his talk, and then Jim, somehow, he herded them up to Master's suite, to Master's room after the talk. What a blessing. And so Master was seated on one end of the couch. My mother was seated on the other end. And my father was seated in a chair that was sort of facing Master. And Jim and I were on the floor. And I don't remember what Master said. I don't remember what was said. You know, Jim introduced my parents. And I think Master was also talking to some other people. And my father just, he was so taken with Master. He just couldn't get over it. He turned around to us and said, he was from Alabama. He said, he is so intelligent. you know, he observed Master some more. And you know how strong Master's gestures are. And finally, Daddy said to Master, you are so young for your age. And Master went like this, you know, implying it's all God's grace. And at some point, Jim told Master that we were going to Dayton to visit a brother, initiate, his name was David, was in the hospital there. He told Master this. And he told Master the last name. And Jim said, do you have any, I don't know if you'd say a mental hospital, but he had some mental issues. And Jim asked Master if he had any message for David. Master said, tell him to go on with the sweet remembrance of God. And there was a bowl of fruit on, the, I think, the coffee table in front of Master. And he took two, I think he was standing up by this time, he took two grapefruits, one in each hand, and went like this, as if he was weighing them. And he gave one of them to Jim to give to David. As he was giving it to Jim, he said, I think this is the more sweeter one. and he gave the other one to my mother. And so this was kind of a background to, then in the Unity of Man conference, Jim and I were going, and I told my parents, probably on the phone, I asked my mother if she had any message for Master. And she said, kind of hesitantly, she said, "Give him my love." And so I waited until the very last day, just a short while before we were going to leave India. It was in March by that time. There were a group of American initiates there on the floor who were leaving that night. And at the very end of the darshan, I scooted forwards, and I was on my knees in front of Master, so close to his face, and I said, "Master, my mother sent her love." And Master said something I couldn't understand because I was so close to his face. I couldn't focus on his words. And he saw I didn't get it, and he repeated it. And I just was still looking at him. And he repeated again, and finally I said, "Well, Jim will tell me afterwards what he says." And I nodded. But he knew, of course, that I didn't get it. So we turned to go. And that wasn't easy to do. But later Jim told me that Master said, as soon as the thought was sent, it was received. That was about my mother's message.
Oh, lots of good memories. So start with some memories of the 72 tour. So a group of us, David and I and some others, Master led us to the path through a physics class at Myers Park High School in Charlotte and with Charlie Fulcher. I can tell more about that later, but to focus on the 72 tour. So the tour was scheduled to be in Charlotte about 3 or 4 days, which was really nice. And in preparations for all of this, Charlie had devised this. He was going to take Master everywhere. We're going to go to Chapel Hill with the University of North Carolina. We're going to go to UNC Greensboro, like 4 or 5 different stops, and end up in Charlotte. And when Master came, we went up to Washington, D.C. for the arrival of the plane and the huge crowd there and the wonderful first satsang at whatever, I don't even remember what the place was nearby. But we were there for a few days, and part of this was the chance to go and talk to Master, because after Master was going to be in Washington, he was going to come to Charlotte. And so at Mr. Khanna's house, it was a long ranch house. It sloped in the back, so there was a downstairs basement where he'd always stayed. A lot of folks helped. This was one of his houses. And then Master was in a back bedroom. So if you one of the ranch style, you go in and you've got your living room and your kitchen and you're in that direction. You've got your bedrooms. Well, Master was in a back bedroom. And so it was time for Charlie, and then a couple of us tagged along. And Charlie went in and gave him the schedule. And Master looked at him and said, "What do you think I am? An elephant to be dragged around?" And it's like, ooh. So we said, okay. And Charlie would always say, "Yes, sir, no, sir." He was always saying, "Yes, sir, no, sir." So he said, "We'll change it right away, sir." And so we went out of there, and Charlie was quite deflated. I mean, obviously. And later I said, "I was a droopy turkey" after that. But we went back and changed it. We're just going to be in Charlotte. And arranged for some wonderful things. Some talks were at a local Baptist church, which was an American Baptist church, not a Southern. So, and the minister's son was a student of Charlie's, so it was a lovely place. And so that was where some things, and there was a big mall with a big auditorium and some things there. So at any rate, so one thing was Master knew that he needed to be in one spot and needed to tend to his children who were going to come to him. So that's one little bit of it. The other thing was I was only, I was about 20 at the time when Master came. And so my family on both sides was pretty religious, Presbyterian. My mother's father was a Presbyterian minister and all this. So obviously, like many of the rest of you, my family was sort of like, what is all this crazy stuff? What are you doing? So and so. Interestingly, my mother's father had retired. The Presbyterian minister had retired. He was at a nice retirement home in Charlotte. My mother did everything she could to keep Granddad from hearing anything about this. But on the day that Master went to that Baptist church, who was in the front row? My granddad, he heard about it, and he wanted to see who this man was. Now, my guess is his sense of it may be, let me figure out what's going on, who's this guy affecting my grandchild, messing with my grandson. But then, of course, I think it was his own curiosity that brought him the blessing of Master. So that was very sweet. My parents didn't attend, but they're still under Master's grace instead as well. Let me pass it along. I may have some more later, but so it was a beautiful thing to see my grandfather sitting there at the front waiting to get Master's darshan. That was just beautiful.
The first time I saw Master Kripal was on a 5x7 flyer at a health food restaurant in South Miami in 1973. And the words were, come hear the discourses of the living master, talks on reincarnation and vegetarian diet and transmigration of the soul. And I thought, that sounds great. And, get to see a living master. And so I rode my bike to Satsang, where the address was. And at the time, Steve Melick was the Satsang leader. And, of course, Master's physical body wasn't there. But I started hearing words that were from Master that were everything I believed in, but I had never heard articulated. So it was really beautiful. And then they played Master's tape, and totally unintelligible to me. And I felt so happy. I just remember this vibration is something that is just bathing me, and I don't understand it, and I don't even know really how I got here, but thank you, God. And so I kept coming back to Satsang, and eventually I went up to Steve, and I said, I'd like to get initiation. And this was the summer of 74. And he said, well, Master's not answering letters right now, but write your letter, set up the link, and let's see what happens. He said, I see the mark of initiation on your forehead, so just be patient. So that was July 73. Master passed in 74. I'm sorry, that was July 74. Master passed in August 74. And I was, devastated. I remember going to Steve and saying, what? How can this be? And he said, just use Kripal Singh as your Simran and trust in the Master. And for the next 6 years, I spent a lot of time with Master Kripal and used Master Kripal Singh's name as my Simran, and he led me to my initiated moment with Sanchi in 1980. So I feel like I had 8 beautiful years with Kripal before I got initiated and felt the love and the guidance and the protection with that Simran that I used before my initiation with Sanchi. And I'm so grateful that you are all here. I've said it to you, I think, before, but you're blessing this mountain, and Master's blessing is so strong here when you guys come. So thank you.
Well, I'm not really good at public speaking, but I'll give it a shot here. We were fortunate enough to be on the tour in the Bay Area and then down in Anaheim. And we lived in Arcata, came down in my 53 Chevy pickup with a oversized camper on it and camped along the tour. But what strikes me in the Bay Area, I think it was in Berkeley, when we left Berkeley to go to San Jose, they needed somebody to haul the dais, and they heard I had this pickup and thought, I think it'll fit in there. So we shoved it in the back of the pickup, brought it to San Jose to the church, and it felt like, you know, our save, what we could do. And so then he went from San Jose down to Anaheim. He was flying out. And they said, oh, by the way, we need you to take that back to Berkeley and drop it off. And I said, okay, yeah, we can do that. And it's like, it's going to take a while to get down in my old beater Chevy. But so we brought the dais back. And then on the way back on the freeway, Kathy goes, you know, he's flying out of San Jose, because everybody had already left. Nobody could afford to fly at that point. Nobody had any money, hardly, so. But maybe he's there. There's limited flights to Anaheim. I thought, well, why not? So we pull into the airport and park and go in, and here's Master sitting there by himself, pretty much. And, sorry. So we go up to him, and I'm sort of sitting in the background, but my daughter, who's 3 years old, goes up and gets on his lap and hangs out there for, I don't know, half hour, just playing with him. And it was absolutely amazing. It was so super sweet, and she got totally blasted by this. And we didn't know what we had, I don't think. And then in Anaheim, we finally got down there, and the last day he was on the porch of the sanctuary and saying goodbye to everybody. And we were going to San Diego from there to visit Kathy's parents. And so he's out in front of the Reno Serene, and John Lovelace is in the back, and he's giving darshan to everybody. And my 3-year-old runs up to him and grabs his index finger and just hangs on to it. And we have the photo. It's super, super sweet. And, yeah, she had a real special relationship with him. So that's my memory.
We were talking, remembering a story that's been told. It would be wonderful if the person to whom this story happened were here tonight. He's from North Carolina. But this is a pretty remarkable story, and it ties in with what Sarojini said about those young people who were seeking initiation right there in the summer of 1974. So one of our other crowd of all these high school students that came through Charlie's, some preceded my group, several. One was John Tracy, who I think was about 3 years younger than I. So John had probably just graduated from high school in the summer of spring of 1973. And so in the summer of 1974, he was 19 years old, 1 year of college under his belt, very interested, wrote to Master about initiation, or maybe he talked to, anyway, somebody contacted. John got a reply at the late July 1974, you are approved for initiation. He was so excited. He drove over to Charlie Fulcher's house, said, "Charlie, I've been accepted." And Charlie said, "Great. Let's take you up to Mr. Connors, and we'll get you initiated up there." This is interesting because Charlie actually had been authorized to give initiation instructions as well. Okay, let's go on up there. So they drive on up there, and they get there and go to Mr. Connors' house, and I'm up there. And Charlie says, "Okay, well, why don't you, Jim will take you over. You're not going to get initiated here. You're going to go over." And we couldn't remember. It was one of the women that it was.
Helen McDaniels.
That's right. It was Helen McDaniels. "We're going to go over to Helen McDaniels' house, and you'll get initiated over there." So John went over there, got the initiation instructions. Life was wonderful. Then he and Charlie came back to North Carolina. So we first, and there it was, right there at the end, right before Master passed on, John got initiated. So this was just wonderful. And so for years and years, he's just so happy about all this. We first heard this story in about 2000, 2002. So here we are, 25, 26 later, years later. We were having kind of a little Carolinas retreat on the weekend, and we'd had a program on Friday night and Saturday morning, and this was Saturday evening. And we've had dinner at John and Carol Tracy's house, and we're just doing like we're doing tonight, memories of Master. So John is telling this story, but all of a sudden Charlie and I say, "Hold on a minute. Those days that you went up to Washington, D.C., Charlie and I were in India with Master." And John just went, I mean, literally, Charlie was in India until August 12th. I was in India when Master passed. And so John is just totally shocked. And he runs back into his bedroom and grabs all his papers and said, "No, it's here. I had it. Master took John, Master in the form of Charlie Fulcher, took John Tracy up to Washington, D.C. Interestingly, one thing happened. There are a couple of funny little things about all this. So Charlie came over. Charlie had a series of Volkswagens. He had a black Beetle for a while, but at that point in time, he had a yellow VW station wagon. And he came over and got John. And as they're backing out of his parents' driveway, he runs over the flowers they have sort of right there when you turn in, you know, decoration near the mailbox, and paused and got out and scooped up the flowers and put them back gently, and then wiped his hand, boom, boom, once, and the dirt's all gone. Charlie wouldn't have done that. The real Charlie Fulcher, who we know, wouldn't have done that. And John's mother was really particular about flowers. So, anyway, and as they were driving up, they stopped. Charlie always stopped for pizza in Chapel Hill. It was about 3 hours from Charlotte, and then you had another 5 hours on up. So they stopped for pizza, and Charlie cut his pizza like he always does. Gets a big old piece, notches the outer edge so he can fold it, and, you know, eat it like that. And that's exactly how Charlie did it. And then, Judy, I think you remember this better, this part. So on the way back, as John is riding back in the car with Charlie, John asks him a couple of questions. So, Judy, do you remember that better? And do you want to?
Well, I don't think I do. He asked two questions, and John said that when he was relating this at Junaluska to us, he said, "I was in an intellectual stage then," something like that, you know. And He asked two questions. One, I don't remember what the question was, but Master's answer was, I'm only interested in the subtlest of the subtle. I mean, Charlie's answer was, I'm only interested in the subtlest of the subtle. And John thought, well, that was an interesting answer for Charlie, you know. And they were riding along, and John asked Charlie, he said, I remember how John asked me, he said, do, you know, kind of stuttered, you know, a little shy to ask it. I think he said, do you do Simran while you're driving? I think that's what he said. And, or what do you do? Something like that. And Charlie said, I listen to the sound current.
Yeah, I mean, interesting. No, I was not already up in Washington, D.C. at that time, and I don't know what vehicle I might have driven to take John to Helen McDaniel's, so Master used whatever form he needed to connect John. So that was remarkable.
John said when he was relating this to us at Junaluska that he'd always felt deprived, that, you know, nothing special had happened around his initiation time, you know.
Yeah, I think, John, that sense of deprivation was also a little bit, well, I came along so late, I didn't get a chance to see Master on the 72 tour and have a direct experience with him like that. So I think that was the other piece of it. But anyway, that was quite a night together, because John was absolutely flabbergasted, and we were all, you know, stunned initially, but then it's just like we just all, I think you'd have to say, reveled in the grace and the power of the Master. It was just amazing. Anyone else?
A couple of little things. In Dallas, my cousin and her husband lived in Dallas area, and my cousin's husband was an atheist. But they came to the talk. It was in a church, I think it was in a church, and they were in those pews listening to Master. I don't think they understood anything what Master said, but I remember Master, it appeared to me that he was looking right at Scott, and he related the story of the atheist who was on his deathbed, and about the child who read the sign on the door that said, God is nowhere, and the child read the sign. Master said, God is now here. He related that story, and I'm sure he was looking right at Scott. But another interesting thing about, you know, we saw the film with the policeman, with Master at Sant Boni, and Jim was a policeman at that time. I mean, he worked at the press, but he was either part-time policing or volunteer policeman. So, and he had told Dusty Nielsen was the police chief that we saw. Dusty was a big guy, 6'4". And so he got Dusty interested in coming to see Master. And, of course, they made sure Dusty got in there to see Master. And then Master gave him an apple at the end of his time with him. He handed Dusty an apple. Well, we learn later, Dusty told Jim later, when he went outside of the building of Master's little house, he gave the apple to some child who was there. So that's all I wanted to say.
Well, Jim got me on the path. Her husband. Yes, yeah, he says that but I don't say that. Because my wife and I showed up and we'd known you guys from college. And my wife couldn't stand anything she saw and heard, and somehow I loved it all. And that put me on the path. I became a vegetarian that Thanksgiving weekend. And meditated, and that literally I started the path at that moment. And the only picture on all of his walls in that little building was of the master, which I had never seen anybody with a beard and a turban in my life. So it was quite a alteration in my whole universe. And I saw a master a few times during the tour in L.A., and there was one time in the in that church where I was really close and under looking up at him, and it was quite earth-shattering. But I never actually had an interview or any talking or anything like that.
And then, Greeley, I think you were telling us today that when you walked into this house, it was very austere looking. White walls, there was just nothing there. And you were, and you mentioned that since you're an artist, you're always looking for the art on the walls. And there was nothing there. And yet you walked into Jim's room, and what did you see but a picture of some guy in a turban with a beard? And that was what had... You should film him. I'm trying to tell his story, but you need to look at his face, because his face is the wonderful... Yeah.
So Jim had changed greatly.
He had changed greatly. Couldn't stand it. Get out of here. We got to go. Let's... But we had those 3 days, so he obviously... sat me down and somehow turned my head. I mean, he was believable to me. I don't recall that. Strikes me as amazing that I could just do a life switch like that.
I mean, it seems like the appropriate time. I just want to thank the Saveadars for Mount Madonna and Ronnie Satsang for making these days happen, because they're life-changing for me anyhow, and I really appreciate it.
Jack, this has been kind of life-changing for me, too. I really feel like throughout my journey on the path, I've been very guarded and have not let Master in. But this retreat just feels like it's, those barriers are breaking down. Sorry. It was so interesting that tonight's the memories of Master Night, and that Rosemary read today, and that she was reading about me. I was the kid that said, "Master, can I go over and watch the Independence Day parade?" And Master said, "You don't need to do that. I'll set up a TV for you." But that's not the real independence. And you know that wonderful talk that Master gave, that Rosemary, I think, read a little bit of an excerpt from today. And I had that incredible blessing to be there on the roof with Master at that last darshan. And the transcription captures the words well, but they didn't quite capture the atmosphere as no book could. it was a small group up there. And Jerry Turk was there, and Lloyd Fager was there. And the person who was sort of encouraging Master to initiate the young person who had said he'd read everything and had been on the vegetarian diet, Jerry was encouraging Master to initiate that. And for whatever reason, Master knew that that person, I don't think that person got initiated. But it was a small group. It was a very blessed time, but it was also kind of maybe this is all retrospective. It also seemed a sad time, because one of the first things Master said was, and I'm sorry, these are something from God. They know when to come. What was the... These... What? That's right. They know when to come, and they know when they're going back. They won't let you down by that. And Master had, over the previous few weeks, kept saying things. It's like, I'm leaving soon. He had talked earlier about, I'm in the evening of my life. And it was interesting, there was a talk in 69, I think, that was been read here, where he said, I'm in the evening of my life. But at that time, there were a number of initiates there. There was this whole big building project. People were trying to buy land and going to buy land and get the special permission from the government of India and set up this whole sort of colony to be, physically close to Master. And we were sitting around the table one of those evenings. And this was reflecting my own conflict about what was happening with me that night. But I just looked at him as we were talking about this. Well, what if Master, leaves tomorrow? And they took offense at that. But it just struck me at the time that Master is kind of signaling that his earthly mission is about to be done. And so that last night, that last darshan session, was brief but beautifully charged, and it was so clear that they know when to come, they know when to go back, and they won't let you down. He was just there. The next day was Sunday, August 18th, and there was a very brief darshan. Master just came on the second floor balcony, and that small group of Westerners were there, and he just gave a very brief darshan. And the next day, Monday, he went, was taken to the hospital, and then he passed on Wednesday, the 25th, and I think I was the person who said, Master, I just wish that I... That last comment, almost, Master, I wish that I have more love and devotion for you. And I think that's obviously still what I'm working on. That's all.